Good afternoon. Happy to be with you. High-speed chase is at the board. Technical director, studio engineer. My name's Mishki. I'll be with you till 2. I've been out the last couple of days. Did I miss anything? I was looking at the calendar a month ago and noticed that the 2nd of August I was off work because the twins were playing a day game. So I arranged to take some kids out of the state up north to a lake in Wisconsin. Left right after the show a couple days ago and was up north when I heard the news. It was close to midnight before I learned the twins had canceled the game the next day and that my show would air. So I had the choice of beelining as fast as I could back to the state of Minnesota and the Twin Cities to be on the air with these kids in tow, kids who had parents who worked, so I would have had to have had them here at the studio. Talking to the boss about it, having someone fill in for me. Those of you who caught the show yesterday know that I decided to stay put. I knew that the kids who had looked forward to the trip for a month would be happier, but the sad thing to report is that I actually felt I would be happier if I didn't come in. Which worries me a little bit because if you're a journalist, those are the days you want to be at the helm. I'm not a journalist. I studied journalism, got my degree in journalism, thought I wanted to be a journalist, decided I did not. I do believe, however, that yesterday was a day for journalists. And I thought it'd be best if someone with some journalistic background took over. I don't know that today is, but yesterday was. Ted Koppel once said of Larry King, "If we arrived at the same time at the same fire, I'd want to know how it started. Who's putting it out? How's that going?" Larry would want to know why these guys wanted to be firemen. I used to think a little bit more like Ted. These days, I think a little bit more like Larry. But what also worries me about the fact that I did not want to drive back down south and appear for the show is that I wanted to keep my distance from this tragedy. There are all sorts of different responses to something like this. The one I admire the most, and the one that can't be topped, literally can't be topped, will never be topped as long as there's human life on this planet, is a response of compassion. That is the king of responses. Whether you're actually doing anything with that compassion or just feeling it. My response was a weariness at more tragedy. And when I say more tragedy, I mean, in this business, you come across it every day, you see it every day, and for the most part, I see it and move on from it. But I still have to see it. And I think over time it wears on some of us. In my particular case, I already have a serious susceptibility to depression, so it's probably not that strange that a sort of a fatigue would come over me or a weariness at more human suffering, this time closer to home. But that is not a response one should necessarily be proud of. I am around people and run into people who instantly feel compassion in situations like this. Their heart goes out to everybody suffering without any hesitation. That is their immediate reaction. It is something, those of you who feel that, you should feel very fortunate to be able to, because there is not a greater response, nor is there a greater feeling to have in your body, no matter how developed you are morally, you will never surpass that. I had a lot of different thoughts in the time between when I heard about this and knowing I was going on the air today. Many of them are ones I haven't heard in the media. I imagine you also have some thoughts, some feelings that have not been expressed in the media. I'm wondering if you'd be interested in calling and passing those along. There's a wonderful anonymity to radio. We don't know who you are. You don't have to use your real name. The reason I bring this up is you might be uncomfortable with some of your thoughts. I'm uncomfortable with some of mine, some of the ones I just expressed, and others that I have in situations like this. But there also might just be takes on this that you haven't heard or views you haven't heard that are less personal and just observational. But when something like this happens, talk radio, I think, can be very helpful by giving voice to a lot of people who have the advantage of now a couple of days, the advantage of observing, of standing off to the side and watching all of this, and being thinking people, having ideas that have been knocking around in their head, thoughts, questions, concerns, observations that haven't been aired either on television or on the radio. I welcome those at 651-646-TALK, 651-646-8255, toll-free 877-615-1500. I'll pass along a few more of my own. I often wonder what it is about the proximity of tragedy that changes it. Now, clearly, if the proximity is a family member, well, we all get that. But I'm talking about just geographically, not in any sort of relation, but just the difference between this happening here and in Milwaukee. I'm often fascinated by the way we are so tribal. Minnesota's our tribe. America's another tribe. Our family's a tribe. And I remember reading about moral development in human beings and reading that the stages, the three stages that are generally agreed upon as the stages people go through morally is selfish, then ethnocentric, or a sort of a care for the tribe, whether that tribe's your family or your state or your country, and then there's a world-centric view where you care for everybody equally. There's just a compassionate response to all people and all suffering equally. I don't happen to be at that third stage. Very few people are. It's a very small minority of the planet. And I would say there's a fairly large number that are at a selfish state, which is a real, it's childlike in its stage, because you're really only concerned with yourself. I mean, primarily that's where your focus is. But I was looking at the news today, and I think I got some of it in front of me. Hungry, frightened, and shouting for help, families perched perilously in treetops or on roofs of their flooded homes in India. Death toll rising, 186 killed, 19 million driven from their homes. I can read that on a daily basis and come in and do a goofy show. I read it all the time and come in and do a goofy show. How is that possible? Well, it's possible if you're not at that particular stage of moral development, which clearly for me indicates I am not. Whereas bridge goes down to my city, just down the street from where I'm broadcasting, can come in and do that kind of a show. Reading today about that Brazilian crash. They just played the recordings from the black box. 186 dead in that crash. They just have the scream of the pilot. Doesn't faze me. Let's see, there was another one I came across today. I don't see it now. There's another big one in the paper today. I don't know where it was in the world. It wasn't the flooding one. It might have been a Civil War situation. This is something else I admire. Photograph today, church group friends, Heather Madsen of Edina, Carrie Gill of Minneapolis, Kelly Hoadley of Minnetonka, Greta Tracy of Minneapolis, Heather Trimble of Chanhassen, Minnesota, praying together at Gold Medal Park near the collapsed Interstate 35W bridge. I have a question, and then I'll start with a comment on this. I cringe a little bit at how often I hear our thoughts and prayers are with you, and I only cringe because I don't believe that. I believe in only a fraction of cases are people praying for other people. So when I see this photograph of these people I just mentioned praying in Gold Medal Park, I don't know if they told anybody their thoughts and prayers were with them, but they're actually following through with it. They actually are praying. And why I admire that is they weren't able to run down there and pull anybody out of the water. And there's really nothing left for anybody to do beyond, I suppose, blood donations, financial donations to the Red Cross or wherever. But these people, nothing really in it for them, are taking the time to do what they feel is something that can help this situation. And I just wonder how many people actually hit their knees, say, at bedtime and said to themselves, well, I don't ordinarily do this, but we gotta help out here. And thus commenced their prayer. And in their minds felt they were powerfully helping out. I mean, they must feel that. And no one has any information to indicate that they weren't. But that's always admirable, because I don't know how many politicians who say our thoughts and prayers are with you actually, I don't know if that's real or not. It sounds good. There was a guy in Hawaii who was going to jump off a cliff and commit suicide. And there was a cop trying to talk him down. The cop was very close to him, almost close enough to touch him, not quite. At one point, the guy decided, screw it, I'm jumping. And he jumped. And the cop dove. Now, the people watching thought, the cop's dead. The guy's dead for sure, but the cop's dead too. That was an incredibly stupid thing to do, what he just did. Somehow, miraculously, the cop's leg caught on something, and he caught the guy. Saved his life. He said to the cop afterwards, what the hell did you do that for? If the guy wants to kill himself, let him kill himself. No sense taking you with him. I mean, if you thought you could get him without going down, fine, but there was no reason to believe that what you were going to do was going to do anything but kill you. And the cop said something to the effect, and on the exact quote, I didn't feel when I leapt and attempted to grab him that I was saving him. I felt I was saving myself. Now, a lot of people have tried to interpret that, but some people believe after talking to him a little further, that what he meant was he didn't see at that point a difference between himself and the person who was jumping. He didn't see a separation, which is that's a theological take on our existence here, that there's an illusion that there are these gaps between us, these divisions. And one thing I thought of when people were recounting over the last day and a half or so these heroic stories, where you would hear of people doing things or see people doing things that put themselves in danger, I found myself wondering how much in these situations the veil sort of fades away in terms of differences between people, the idea that there's this great separation, and how much people feel that in that moment, because of the trauma or because of the sudden shock of it, that the veil sort of pulled away and we're just all one big thing. And so I had a lot of thoughts along those lines. I also marveled at how calm some people were when they were facing their own death. They didn't die, but they didn't know they weren't going to die, and had every reason to believe they were going to die. And yeah, we all know about the kids screaming on the school bus, but some people went to what they thought was their death in a relative state of calm. I remember talking to a woman on the air at one time who was involved in the hijacking of an airplane, and they were killing people one by one because their demands weren't being met. The terrorists were. They were bringing them to the stairs and shooting them, and then the bodies tumbled down to the tarmac. And she was waiting in line for her turn to be shot. She's a local woman, wrote a book about it. And she talked about the tremendous sense of calm that just came over her as she waited. Just complete peace, knowing she was going to die. I remember talking to another guy. He was a guy who was going to be killed in Africa. I think he was a missionary. And he was waiting to be shot. Now, in both these cases, the people were shot. They just didn't happen to die, even though they were shot in the head. This guy said the same thing. Said as he was waiting for his execution, he was just very calm. And I found myself over the last day or so thinking about the states of mind people are in these situations, both rescuers and the people who are about to die. So I've had a lot of different thoughts. Some of it I've heard mentioned elsewhere in the media, some of it I haven't. But if you've been mulling this whole thing over the last few hours or a couple of days and want to say something, I'll just open the lines for you. If you've never called a talk radio show before, think of it as just calling up, saying your piece, and being allowed to disappear into the ether, hang up and move on. But maybe cathartic for you, maybe something you feel good about afterwards. It simply isn't going to be anything where I take you on it. That isn't the kind of show I do. And I don't even need to have any kind of exchange with you if you don't want. So if you want to just say your piece, if there's something you feel needs to be said about this that hasn't, something that has been in your mind, feel free to call 651-646-TALK or 877-615-1500. I'll be back.
Mishki, AM 1500, KSTP.
Okay, we'll go to the phones. Clarence, go ahead.
Hi, I just listened to what you were saying, and you were talking about some of the thoughts you had after the tragedy on the bridge, and I kind of, you know, same as I'm sure everyone, had plenty of thoughts running through my mind, but as I was watching the coverage the night that it happened, one thing that kind of, it didn't make me angry, I don't really know how to express how I felt about it, but they had news cameras taking pictures of people coming out of the ambulance into the hospital. And I just kind of feel like it bothers me because after everything these people have been through, could we at least let them get into the hospital before we shove the camera in their face? And it's really all I had to comment on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think there were also camera shots of people being carried out on stretchers where they looked in pretty rough shape, and the camera was pretty close to them. I remember feeling a little uneasy about that, but if I were really honest about it, I'd also have to admit I didn't turn away. Cliff.
Yeah, Tommy, my comment's kind of on the same with the media, not so much in the same as the last guy, but it's the way, I guess, that they cover it on TV. I think your local media does a fine job, and you need them there, but I think as far as bringing Matt Lauer in from the coast and Katie Couric to do their half-an-hour shows and their morning shows, I mean, they all have affiliates here in the Twin Cities that can send them videotape. You know, the less people down there, the better, they say, but you have these people flying in, cost them thousands of dollars for equipment and for the trips, maybe keeping them overnight. And I guess the same with the president coming and the first lady. She comes today. She might be coming on Air Force One. I don't know how they work that out with her, but he's going to be on Air Force One. They come on two different days. That's thousands of dollars of taxpayers' money where they're coming to get their face on the tube. And I just think that instead of these, you know, the national media is coming to do this stuff, why don't they talk about maybe saving this money, send it to the victims themselves, the thousands of dollars that they would spend bringing their people out for an hour-long show? And I guess that's my comment on that, is I just think the money that they spend for that, for shipping people out here for, you know, to have the bridge in the background on their newscast would be money better spent sending it to the victims' families.
When you were saying that, at first I was thinking, well, they'll never do that because
right.
as soon as they don't show, the other guys who do show get to brag about how they're on the scene and the competition isn't. But at the end there, when you said they could use the local affiliates and take the money saved and send it to the Red Cross, I actually think a network might benefit by letting that be known, by saying instead of having Matt Lauer appear today there, we are going to use the local affiliate.
Right.
And take them out. Now, if they said that and you're watching, or you're probably going to admire that and give them credit for that, and then not feel that the other guys have anything on them. Not a bad idea. Thanks.
Okay. Yep. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Eileen.
Yo, I just want to tell you, Mishki, you're articulating my feelings exactly.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, because I haven't been able to get my arms around how I feel about this. I've sat in silent prayer and haven't hit the knee and at bedtime and say a prayer and things. But throughout the day, I say a prayer for all of the rescue workers and all of the unfortunate people that were involved. And just like me, I have the first, or as you first said, you have this, oh, that could have been me, or that could have been one of my family members, or it could have been somebody that I knew. And you feel guilty about that, but not overly guilty. You feel more grateful, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
so all you can do is just sit back and pray, because you can't go pull those people out of the river.
Right.
And you've articulated it very well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Eileen.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
People, I also am and can have been fascinated by this for a long time, continue to be, by the number of people who want to help out in a situation like this. I think there are a lot of people out there who do not feel utilized, not just in a situation like this, but in general. They just don't feel that what they have to give is being used in this world. And they have a tremendous sense of dissatisfaction and lack of purpose, because that's the case. And they wanted to be put to work to bring that sense of satisfaction back and to have that sense of purpose and to thus feel fulfilled, something that they don't have in their lives on a daily basis. And I would argue that's the majority of us. I remember I used to do this show in the evening once a month, where the first hour would be spent having people call up who need a little something. They just need a little help. They need a little something to bridge the gap. It was never about money. We didn't allow money to enter into it. It was about you're in this predicament. You're in this pickle. We would have people call up who say, it's 95 degrees and my grandma doesn't have an air conditioner. We can't afford to get her an air conditioner. We're worried about her. It's just a problem they'd throw out. So in the first hour, everybody would throw out problems. The second hour, people would come with solutions. And we'd match them up. And it was wonderful. And it got really interesting. I remember one time someone called up and said, I don't have a mother. I've never had a mother. Grew up without a mother. I'd like a mother. And I thought, well, we're not going to be able to come through on this. Nonsense. Next hour, someone called up, I've never had a daughter. Older woman. Hooked the two of them up. After 9/11, the show died. Why did it die? Had more people than ever wanting to do the second hour, where they helped out, couldn't get a soul to call up in the first hour. People refused to claim to have a single problem. That fascinated me. In the wake of what happened on 9/11, people felt their problems shouldn't be talked about, shouldn't be called problems. People are having real problems. This isn't a problem. But what was sad was the people in the second hour had grown 20, 30-fold. All standing there, all wanting to do something. Nothing to do. No one would let them help them. Who's in for news today?
Hello.
Johnny
Height.
Hi, Tommy.
I wonder what you're going to lead with. Go ahead, sir.
It's sunny and 82 degrees. Five people now confirmed dead in the 35W bridge collapse. Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek says several are still missing and a number of vehicles have been identified.
We believe that the number of missing and unaccounted for are down to 8. That number could fluctuate, but that's the number we're going with this morning. 8 folks. Additionally, we heard last night through a briefing from the NTSB that approximately 60 vehicles have been identified within their collapse site that are visible to folks.
I don't know that you'd find any other part of the country where the official reporting, that sounding, that kind of voice, and that guy delivering would use folks twice like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Folks, yeah. Divers did go back into the water this morning.
Starting out this morning, our operations are going to be on concentrating on clearing the upstream side of the collapse site.
There are 4 partially submerged vehicles that they want to thoroughly search, and Stanek says there are 9 potential targets. Those, though, are not necessarily cars. They could be debris from the bridge. Sheriff Stanek says river conditions still pretty treacherous. As far as getting around the cities, the Highway 280 detour seems to be working well as a temporary replacement for 35W to get north and south between Highway 36 and I-94. You will encounter some construction work on 280 today, though. Right lane closed in both directions. Crews are doing some work there that should only last until about 3 this afternoon. 280 now being used as a temporary freeway with no access to County Road B, Broadway, and Walnut or Roselawn Avenue. A Wisconsin judge is sentenced to 16-year-old life in prison with the possibility of parole for the shooting death of his high school principal. Eric Hainstock was convicted of first-degree intentional homicide yesterday. He will be eligible for parole in 30 years. And it's still expected to be a bit of a stormy hurricane season in the Atlantic, not as intense as originally thought. Researcher William Gray has again scaled down his estimates for May, now forecasting 8 hurricanes for the season. 5 Eyewitness News weather forecast, increasing clouds, 65 overnight tonight, thunderstorms tomorrow, and Patrick Camber says maybe some soaking rains possible for the Twin Cities. Cooler, too, high around 78. Right now, sunshine and 82 degrees at AM 1500.
Now, back to Mishki on AM 1500, KSTP.
Mishki here with you, continuing to take calls. The number 651-646-TALK, 651-646-8255. Toll free 877-615-1500. Hi, Jerry.
Tommy, it is really a pleasure. You're so cotton-picking authentic and real. The event that took place on Wednesday, I drive public transportation. And I've been in a similar experience. It's a very spiritual, sacred event what happens and what you're going through, because you blink an eye, you don't know whether when you open your eye that you're going to be back. And when you're back, it's a big wow. And that's pretty sacred, and that's very spiritual. I experienced that out at the local airlines here locally, de-icing aircrafts, and I was in a bucket, and my bucket connected on the back of a DC-9. And I had no clue. All I could do was brace myself because I knew something was going to happen. I closed my eyes and said a prayer, and after the hit, I opened my eyes, and I was still there, and it's like, wow.
And then what happened? Once you were still there, the rest of that day, what happened?
Well, I had to take control of the situation because my driver, which it's a team method, and my driver lost it, and I had to get that person to recollect themselves and get us out of the situation. And I was going to, the driver was supposed to talk to the pilot. The driver was not able to, so I had to get away out of the bucket and go up and plug in and talk to the pilot. And
for those who can't picture what you're talking about, can you explain it one more time in terms of what actually happened?
Well, I was in a de-icing truck.
All right, you're
de-icing aircraft out at MSP.
Okay.
And I was in a, well, what you'd call a cherry picker. It's,
right.
It's with a crane and an open bucket, and you're in a harness and a lariat. And my driver put the vehicle into gear, and I was real close, and my bucket and myself connected with the rear stabilizer on the back of a DC-9.
And what does that mean, connected with it?
We hit the aircraft.
And what does that do in your bucket? What happens when that occurs?
Well, the bucket could let go, and you could be left hanging from a rope, or you could possibly die from it.
From the impact?
From the impact and whatever happens to you after, if everything does not stay together
okay.
And do what it's supposed to do.
The whole contraption could go over.
Well, the bucket could come apart, then
right.
You'll find out whether your lariat and your harness that you're in, whether that's going to do what it's supposed to do. It's
mm-hmm.
always told to you
mm-hmm.
that it is. But you don't know that until you experience the actual situation.
So beyond that day, what happened to you from that?
Well, you look at life totally different, and you don't take it for granted.
But that doesn't last, does it? Doesn't that
oh,
fade?
Oh, yes, it does, sir.
It
yes,
stays.
It yeah, because I've had some experience with loved ones passing and holding on to them, and one was a dad, one was a mom, and one was a son. And even though I wasn't the one leaving, it was a very spiritual event. It was a very sacred event that you don't prepare yourself for it. And you don't know when or where or
mm-hmm.
why.
Mm-hmm. So in retrospect, just dealing with the accident that occurred at the airport, and since you did survive it, Are you grateful it happened?
Well, I wouldn't like to go through it again.
No,
but yes,
I didn't ask
I am,
that. Yeah.
Yes, I am grateful that it happened because I look at life totally different.
Yeah.
And I don't take it for granted anymore.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome, Tommy. Thanks for your special work and all of you at AM 1500. You're fantastic.
We appreciate that. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Michelle.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm in the car. I'm on my way to Duluth, heading out of town. But I just wanted to call, outside of your show, I usually don't pay attention to anything that the Hubbard stations do. And I was a little impressed yesterday. I was very impressed when President Bush was talking and the reporter who was live covering his press conference cut away. Because she's like, we're cutting away from the president and going back to what's going on, because the president got into partisan stuff and how a Democratic Congress should have had a bill and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, kudos to Channel 5 for cutting away from the president, because the other stations, the national networks, don't have the guts to do it. So
I'll pass that along. Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Mishki, is this cold hearted or not? Are you sick of watching this on TV? I mean, the stories are kind of fabricated now. You know, they're just trying to make stories. And one of the stations should just have all news except this. You know, there's got to be other things going on in the world.
Yeah, one thing I do in these situations, and again, I don't know that this is wise or healthy, I don't look at moving pictures of it. I look at stills and I listen to the radio. I don't know for certain why that is.
I mean, it's like they have a loop on, like an 8-minute loop of the same pictures just going over and over and over again. And it's like after you've seen them 4 times, you know, it's, you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they preaching to? I mean, who doesn't know about this?
I don't know what the hunger is out there for more of this. I will say that last night when I mentioned to my wife that I was trying to figure out what to do on the show today, she strongly urged me before doing anything on the show to take a stroll down there, which I had not intended to do. And so this morning I drove over there, and of course you're not supposed to do that, but in my line of work I felt it was more of an obligation if I'm going to talk about it. So I illegally found my way to a spot where I shouldn't have been so I could observe it and take it in and then come back. And it's obviously extremely... it's very different to be there than to see anything or hear anything in television or radio. I just think that a lot of people going down there are not gawkers. They're going down there sort of to be able to feel it a little more. Some people can feel it just by hearing about it. Some people got to stand there and see it.
No, but does anyone else agree that you'd like to see something else besides that? I mean, it's got to be psychologically bad for you to sit there and watch the same thing over and over again.
Well, this was another thought I have that ties in with what you're saying. I wondered if in the first 24 hours... if more had been said about this than had been said in 6 months about any similar type tragedy in 1920.
Oh, easily. Because I got up at 1:30 in the morning and all four of the stations still were broadcasting nonstop, non-commercial coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think there's something to that. And, of course, we have, all of us, the ability to turn away. I remember also feeling guilty, though, was it yesterday? Yesterday, I was in Wisconsin, and I was driving on a country road. It was the most astonishingly beautiful day, and it was so pretty, the farm fields and the blue sky and the lakes, that I just felt an exhilaration. I just felt so great. And there's a strange thing that happens when you feel that good, when you know other people are feeling that bad. It is so weird to have stuff happen when it's so beautiful out. I remember thinking the same thing on 9/11. One of the most beautiful days of the last decade was 9/11 here in the Twin Cities. That day was I was on the Mississippi River, and it couldn't have been a more beautiful day. And it is so odd when tragedy strikes. When it's so stunningly gorgeous outside.
But was this tragedy or was this a miracle? Because, I mean, if you look at how many people are on that bridge, how many casualties there were, that is a miracle.
You know, this is another thing, another thought you've reminded me of. I often have thought of this yesterday. How many times, it must just be the most natural thing to human beings, how many times do you hear it could have been worse? And not just in this situation, in everyone. In 9/11, one of the most horrific things to ever happen in this country, you hear people still talk about, boy, if that had been an hour later, would more people have been in that building and would that not have been a worse disaster? Boy, how fortunate we are that it happened as early as it did when people were still on their way there. It is a funny thing to me because... If your mom's dead, then it isn't a miracle.
No,
it's a tragedy. And I don't think there is anything. The number of people who died, are the number of people who died. I guess there are always going to be. I know, but you can.
Cars.
But we say this about everything. We say this about everything. Isn't it nice in the Iraq War that we haven't lost more? It's a funny response to me. It's a, you know, there is a psychological take on ethnicities. If you are Irish and go to a psychologist for therapy, they have a way of learning the Irish cultural background and treating you a little bit differently than if you're German and go. And you know the whole take of it could have been worse?
Mm-hmm.
That's an Irish take on the world. That's an Irish take on trouble. You know what the Germans say?
I'm 110% German.
The Germans say, well, can't get any worse than this. They take solace in that. And these are actual cultural views. And they're used to teach therapists sometimes to get a sense of the take of someone coming in to sit on that couch.
But, well, my mom used to tell me when I was afraid, all they can do is kill you.
It always could be worse. Of course, it could always be worse. But it's pretty bad as it is. And I tend to, I guess, go the other way and say, no, it's just bad. It's just bad when a bridge goes down. And I don't, yeah, it's wonderful the way people rallied. That I agree with. But that a few people who could have died didn't, that doesn't sit in my mind as strongly as the people who did die for some reason. And maybe that makes me pessimistic. I don't know. But it does, it fascinates me, too, how many people have talked about this. This has stuck in my head over the last 38 hours. I was almost there. My brother left the bridge 5 minutes earlier. I normally take that way. What is, there's something behind that. There's something going on there. I don't know what it is. For instance, me, I never take that bridge. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So, but I still don't say, well, that couldn't have been me. It could have been me if the Ford Bridge went down. But the Ford Bridge didn't go down, but I think people want to be, I think there's a wanting to be closer to this. And if you just made it off the bridge, you are. You're more kind of a part of this. And if you were 10 miles away, you're a little less a part of it. It's a, that whole line of thinking is interesting to me because there's a difference in some people's minds between being just off the bridge for 5 minutes and being off the bridge for 1 hour. And I don't know what the difference is. But they see a difference there.
Well, that's pessimistic or optimistic.
I think it has to do with a feeling of connectedness to the event and wanting to be a part of it and feeling a part of it, even though I don't know that whether you're just off or off 2 days ago, it matters. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
You bet. Bye.
AM 1500, KSTP.
You read in Sierra Leone how 50 people are dead and 148 missing after a ferry capsized overnight. You wonder if they're going to have a 48-hour stretch like our last couple of days. Wonder how things are handled there. What occurs in a place like Freetown, Sierra Leone, after 50 people die and 148 are missing in a ferry sinking? We got more after the top of the hour, coming up on 1 o'clock. Call if you care to. Happy to take your calls for the rest of the show. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time, Minneapolis.
From ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. As divers brave the fast-moving waters of the Mississippi in search of bodies from the bridge collapse, First Lady Laura Bush gets a first-hand look at the site. She is in Minneapolis today. ABC's Aaron Katursky is there, too, and joins us live.
The First Lady met first responders, Sherry, along with Red Cross volunteers, and a man named Jay Reeves. He helped bring a school bus full of kids on the bridge when it collapsed to safety.
You have a happy part of the tragedy. Thank you so much. We're going to work immediately.
Thank you, ma'am, for being here and expressing your concern for us. It means everything.
Mrs. Bush thanked rescue workers, too. She told them, I know this has been tough. President Bush is due to survey the damage tomorrow, Sherry.
ABC's Aaron Katursky live. As other states order the once-over for their bridges, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty says they'll be checking all past inspections of the 35W bridge very carefully.
They made decisions at a technical level to say the bridge was fit for service subject to, you know, additional inspections. That, in a nutshell, is what happened. We need to go back and review those decisions critically and get to the bottom of it.
Federal safety inspectors will also be going over inspections in the bridge itself, trying to figure out what happened.
It's sunny and 82 degrees in Minneapolis and St. Paul. 4 a.m. 1500 KSTP News. I'm John Hoyt. Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek says the number of missing people after the Minneapolis bridge collapse now stands at 8. 5 deaths have been confirmed. Firefighters recovered the body of a truck driver from the bridge last evening. It's tough work for the first responders, police, fire, and other emergency personnel working at the site. Minneapolis Fire Chief Jim Clack says the recovery efforts have placed added stress on his firefighters.
It's an emotional job when you're doing rescue work and you're saving some and you can't save others. It's tough.
The department has a fire captain who's also a social worker. He's been available to firefighters. An interfaith prayer service for the public, first responders, and the families and victims of the 35W bridge disaster has been scheduled for Sunday evening. It'll be at 7 o'clock at St. Mark's Cathedral in downtown Minneapolis. The service will include a collection for relief efforts. Everyone welcome to attend. Organizers of the 3M Championship Golf event say they will donate some of their proceeds to bridge relief efforts. Tournament initially earmarked charity funds for four local hospitals, but officials say additional money now will be given to the local Red Cross. The 3M tournament began this morning at the TPC course in Blaine. And First Lady Laura Bush arrived in the Twin Cities this morning, went to tour the bridge disaster site. She then went to visit members of the Republican National Committee who are meeting in Minneapolis. First Lady was already scheduled to be in town today to address a conference on America's youth at the University of Minnesota's St. Paul Student Center. The president comes to the Twin Cities tomorrow to view the damage and recovery efforts. 5 Eyewitness News weather forecast tonight. Increasing clouds down to 65. Thunderstorms, soaking rains possible tomorrow, and it'll be a bit cooler. A high of 78, then isolated thunderstorms Sunday, high of 84. Right now it is sunny, 82 degrees at AM 1500 KSTP.
Broadcasting from the border country of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's Mishki.
Last hour, I opened the phone lines to people who wanted to call in and offer any kind of perspective they felt they weren't seeing or hearing out there in the media concerning the bridge collapse. Just anything that had crossed their mind or that they found themselves mulling over that they didn't hear echoed elsewhere in the press or in the electronic media. I'll continue that this hour if you care to call. 651-646-TALK. 877-615-1500. I passed along some of the things that had run through my mind since the collapse. I wasn't on yesterday, and I had a lot of time to just view it all from a distance and take it in, and I was fortunate enough to be in that position. Some people don't get to have that distance. But it was there, and I took advantage of it by just letting the mind roll, just letting the images and events pass before me and follow what it triggered in me. And maybe you did the same. Some of what I felt and thought I've been bothered by, I've passed that along. Some I haven't. But I think it's as interesting to watch how people react as it is to analyze the event itself and how it could have occurred and why it occurred and what's continuing
in the recovery efforts. We don't often have an opportunity to watch ourselves react to something like this in our midst. And the closer it is to home, the more intense and more different the reaction. 651-646-TALK, 877-615-1500. Sarah.
Hi,
go ahead.
I just had a thought on your comment about why people think I just crossed the bridge or I was about to cross the bridge and how close I came. I had a friend call me last night and say I almost lost my husband and sons just on the bridge. They were approaching the bridge and they heard a big noise and saw the smoke and thought it was an accident and exited. But she was kind of rattled because of how close they actually came to being on the bridge when it collapsed. And I think when you see a tragedy of this magnitude, it's hard to wrap your brain around it unless, like you did, went and looked at it and saw it. I think it's hard on TV to really take it all in. And it does seem distant, somewhat distant, unless somebody you know has been affected by it. And I think when you are so close to having been on the bridge or known somebody, it does make it real in a way that it doesn't when you're, you know, you haven't crossed the bridge a million times or you were about to or...
Right.
I think it all of a sudden brings it home and you realize how fragile life is and how it's all about being in the wrong place at the wrong time and how 1 minute, you know, you turn back to grab a bottle of water before you left the house and you're alive.
Yeah, so much of it is in life about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So much of our time is made up of... wondering whether we should engage in this activity or that activity or eat that food or that food, what causes cancer, or what'll increase my odds of living longer. And there's that whole I have control part of things, and then there's just the part where, you know, it's a lightning bolt. It's just a... And some people get real fatalistic about it. Our former governor, Jesse Ventura, used to tell me that because of a instance in his life where he almost drowned, he no longer worries at all about death because during the period that he was drowning and that he thought he was going to die, the idea somehow entered him that the time and place is predetermined.
I believe it is.
And afterwards, he thought, well, that's easy. I'll just forget about it now and just live. The whole thing's already set up. And some people get that way. Other people spend a good part of their day, week, and month making sure that they make it to 90 years of age by, getting over to the Y as often as possible, eating those fruits and vegetables, doing some meditation, keeping the stress down, and on and on and on. And two very different approaches to trying to enjoy this life. I appreciate your observations. Thanks.
Hey, one more thing, Tommy. I talked to you about 8 years ago about going skydiving.
Oh, was this before or after I did it?
It was before you did it.
Okay.
I didn't realize that you did it. I chased you to do it with me because you were thinking about it.
Yeah, I didn't do a real free fall. I did a tandem jump. I didn't have the time, although I will say the tandem jump, I actually think... Because in a jump without someone connected to you, you don't get to have the... You have to have the chute open immediately. You don't get the free fall experience. Because of that, I almost recommend the tandem jump. Obviously, if you work at it and work at it, eventually you do get to have a free fall situation just by yourself. But given the choice of jumping and having a chute open immediately or being connected to a guy and being able to float for a while, 60 seconds in my case at 12,000 feet, because the guy's on my back and I don't have any sense of him whatsoever when I'm falling, I would recommend that and preferred that. I'll tie this into something I said last hour. When I went out of the plane, the human body is set up in such a way that it knows it's not supposed to jump out of a plane. It's supposed to land
while the body is still inside the plane. And there is no preparation for jumping out of a plane. And when the body and mind leave the plane, the body and mind convey to you, you are committing suicide.
Everything about this is all...
Yeah, you are, and you will now die because you have left the safety of the plane. And that feeling will last, at least the first time, until the chute opens. And
yep.
On the way down, I accepted that I was going to die, and it was the most wonderfully peaceful feeling I've ever had. I just closed my eyes and expected it to come any second. And the last thing I expected was a chute to open. Because nothing in my life had trained me to believe that would be the case. Everything had taught me that when you jump out of a plane, you die. Or when you're opening your eyes and looking at a ground 12,000 feet away and your plane has left you, that's when you die. And when the chute opened, all I could do between then and when I landed on the ground, I could not do anything but laugh. There was nothing to do but laugh. And it was that being pulled from the precipice feeling. And it was just, I landed. My wife landed a little bit later. We grabbed a six-pack, went off and sat in a cornfield for the next 3 hours, and I think we just laughed. That's all we did.
I realized it wasn't your time.
Apparently not.
Well, they don't prepare you for what it's like. They prepare you for everything else except what it's like when they open the door and say,
yeah, boy, I don't know that one can... that may be one where the only way to prepare is to have the experience. And then, of course, you can land and say, well, I'm doing that again. That was great. But that first time... And I've talked to friends of mine who've done it, and they've reported similar experiences where once they were free of the plane, it was, okay, that was a mistake. That was dumb. Now we're dead. And it's just, I don't think there's any way for a body not to feel that because it's just trained to feel that. I think it would be unnatural not to feel you're going to die because whoever came up with that as something to do as a hobby was a nut. Whoever came up with that, whoever decided to experiment with that, the first time Orville and Wilbur got something up in the air and someone said, I want to jump out of that baby, she just hung up on me. No, I know it wasn't intentional, but I always think, what did I just say that caused her to suddenly go, that's it, I'm not talking to this SOB. As soon as they saw Orville and Wilbur, we gotta get those things higher. We gotta jump out of them. We gotta jump out of them and let them fly away, and then we gotta fly through the air just ourselves. And it'll be okay. No, it'll be okay. It'll be just fine. Everything's gonna be fine. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Tommy, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
But hey, you know, I one thing I didn't hear you talking about perspectives is, at least in me, A little bit anyway, it kind of caused a crisis of faith. In the sense that, you know, like 9/11, I was telling your call screener, I understand 9/11. That was evil, you know? And even Katrina, there was a lot of human error. And you could say there's human error in this too, but there was so much more chance in this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about people that came across 1 minute earlier and, you know, they're saying they're blessed or an angel is looking out for them, but what about the five that didn't? Was their angel not, were they not blessed enough, or was their angel not, you know, I don't know. It seems so random, and I kind of started thinking, are we really alone out here? Is there, you know, death doesn't worry me, or it's what's after death? If there's nothing after death, you know, I guess I was thinking about that, you know.
Yeah, is it possible that you could not be alone and still live somewhere where you can at any time be the victim of chance? Is it possible to carry both thoughts?
See, from everything I've learned and from everything I believe and still believe, that there's no such thing as luck or chance. You know, everything is designed to a plan, and, you know, I guess I'm wondering what, you know, for people that, you know, the five people so far that have died in this accident, was that part of the plan? And if so, you know, what's going on with that plan, you know?
I'm not a plan guy. I just, you know, as soon as you read one article of a child being raped, the plan thing goes out the window.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make me feel alone. It does make me feel, though, that I have no reason to believe that I get any special safety net in this world while other people don't. I do not believe that those people who were spared that God decided to spare them. I've heard a mother talk about this paralyzed guy who survived, saying Jesus came and saved him. I don't believe that, because the poor people who are out there with the mother dead have to say, oh, Jesus liked him better.
Yeah, and I don't know if I can do that. That's the crisis.
I'll tell you one thing. I interviewed a guy one time who was had spent his life devoting himself to spiritual matters and theological matters and really bolstering his spiritual side, and felt he had a powerful and strong faith. And his 11-year-old boy was riding a bike on the sidewalk. And a woman driving down the street suddenly passed out. She had misread a prescription on a bottle and had taken too much of a medication. And as she passed out, the steering wheel was turning a certain way that it allowed the car to veer up onto a boulevard. And just at the exact point this kid was bicycling past this spot, he was hit and killed.
Right.
This guy told me, he says, don't let anybody tell you that they have any strong faith or that they have a belief system that's going to help them out in times of trouble until you see it happen, because he says, mine went out the window that day, and it was 5 years getting anything back that resembled what it was before. And what it came back as 5 years later was something very different from what it was to begin with. So it's an interesting test of that. But most people who haven't had something that horrible happen, you know, you can look at Elie Wiesel after the Holocaust. What did he say? He said the result for him was he got a divorce from God.
Yeah.
He reconciled many years later, but it was decades later. Thanks for weighing in.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Rich, go ahead.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I just, you know, I have a friend from Bangladesh who was telling me about in their culture, when somebody dies, they actually bring them out into the street and everybody gets a look at the body, and this is going on continuously. And I think that when something like this happens, it reminds us that in America, we have a pretty unhealthy view of death. I mean, we think dead bodies are creepy and weird, you know? And I think that when people are seeing this, or at least picturing it in their mind, it's, I mean, sure, they're sad for the other people, but I think they're more afraid for themselves and what death means for them, because we don't really deal with it much.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. We don't deal with it much. I wonder how much weight you'd give to someone just having a sense of privacy about it, and it having less to do with a problem with death and more to do with wanting to keep it private, because you'll find that families generally don't feel that way when dealing with the body of one of their own. You may feel that way when seeing the body of a stranger.
Well, I use the example of, you know, the actual funeral. I would give you some other examples to clarify that when somebody gets sick, you know, when they get cancer, we say they're fighting cancer. And this idea is almost offensive to me. I mean, we all have cancer, you know, we're all dying. That's part of living. And to fight that says that it's wrong. There's this sort of subconscious thing that you're saying, that to die is wrong and I'm going to fight death. And I, as a culture, I mean, certainly I love America. I'm not here to criticize us on that account, just to be Americans. But the way we look at death is so unhealthy, so removed from what's completely a natural part of a cycle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but how would, what do you see going on here? What I see is a lot of grieving, which wouldn't change, so the grieving wouldn't change. What do you see here that has to do with what you're talking about?
Okay, fair enough. I see that people, initially it feels on the surface like they're mourning somebody they don't know. And I know this is a little bold, but I believe that what they're really dealing with is the acute awareness that they're there too, eventually.
Well, that's certainly a part of it. Oh, I agree. Yeah.
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 And I think that stems from, and, you know, is part and parcel to, that we don't really get this view of death that's balanced with life. We live here to live long. I mean, when you look at hospitals and the way they treat people, I don't know about you, but I've never gone to the doctor where I felt like they're there to help me have a better life. They're there to put a Band-Aid on me and make sure I go ahead and live and my heart beats.
Yeah, I would say that I don't know how many people are afraid of death. I would say most people I know are afraid of pain and afraid of a short life. I don't know if people thought they would die in their sleep at 88 years of age that you would find people still dealing with a great deal of fear. I think people fear checking out too early and checking out with a lot of pain, a lot of trauma. Certainly a bridge collapsing is not the way people want to go at any age. But I don't know, I literally just don't know the answer to this question. How many are actually afraid to die? More people are hanging up on me today than do on the days that I actually get on people. Just, I know it's accidental, cell phones, that's okay. It still hurts, though. Still stings. Alex?
Hey, Mish.
Hi.
This is kind of an odd perspective. It's the morning, or it's the night after the bridge, and I have a podcast that I listen to. It's a morning show from the Washington Post, and you know, they're doing the normal morning show stuff, and they had a news update. And you know, like everybody else, I'm very confused and distraught about what happened on the bridge. I live in East St. Paul, so I don't really know anybody near it. But you know, when something like that happens, it's scary. And you know, you're watching all the news coverage. You know, like Greta Van Susteren covering this and whatever. And they talk about the story for like, you know, 5-6 minutes, but they don't ever say the word Minneapolis. And I just got really angry because, I guess it wasn't anger, it was just being upset because, I mean, you know, this is where we are. We know this so acutely. We know this area so well, and yet, you know, we get mentioned so little in, you know, I guess the grand scheme of things. Minneapolis, St. Paul just doesn't come up on the national scale. And then for something like this to happen and then, you know, not even to have the courtesy to say the name of the town just really, really made me upset. And I don't really know how to explain that.
Where are you from? Did you say East St. Paul?
East St. Paul, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a St. Paul inferiority complex coming to the surface there. I know it well.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to live with that. That's something that they don't even have that across the river really that much. Minneapolitans really don't have that as strongly. It exists to some degree in the Twin Cities, but if you grew up in St. Paul, that's just something that's going to haunt you all your days.
Yeah, I'm just starting to become aware of it now, yeah.
Sometimes what I do is I call up people in New York and just get them to say St. Paul, and then I have a better day. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
This is one way you can test a mortgage company. When you're dealing with a realtor, mention who you're going with for your home loan. And then look at their face. See how they react. I've seen realtors roll their eyes. If you screw up with your mortgage lender, if you don't pick somebody who's going to follow through, who's going to have everything in order, that realtor is going to have a nightmare experience along with you. They have a vested interest in you choosing a mortgage company that's going to make the deal go through smoothly. That's why when you hear realtor after realtor say, well, if you're asking us who we recommend, I'd go with Homestead. When you hear them say that, you say to yourself, well, these guys obviously have a history of coming through. They're there at the closing. Everything's in order. Obviously, this is something that works in the best interest of the realtors. It's going to work in my best interest as well. Well, that's the way it goes at Homestead. Time and time again, you'll find realtors who say, yeah, they're good. They've been around. They'll come through. We won't have any problems there. Who are you going with? All right, fine. You name some others, and they'll pass along a nightmare story or two. I've heard them as well, and it gets ugly. Homestead, 651-490-5555. Call Homestead Mortgage at 651-490-5555.
Now, back to Mishki on AM 1500, KSTP.
Let's see here. Who's next? There we go. Steve.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I originally called when I heard you talking to Sarah, too. I was kind of reiterating some of the stuff you guys were saying about, you know, fate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and talking to a neighbor guy that, you know, he was just, his cat acted up, and he petted his cat a couple times, and that was the difference that day. And, you know, I'm sitting out here right now looking out on 35W, and, you know, I don't see any cars going by over on the north side of 35. And, you know, when I originally called, but I was, you know, I just, when I seen everything, I just, you know, how they're even talking about, you know, there's only 8 people missing, you know, which could, you know, that number could change. And, you know, the amount of debt is, you know, sad in its own right. But, you know, it's, to me, it's just a miracle that, you know, the first minute they got down there, there wasn't hundreds of bodies, you know. That was the first thing that struck me that I really haven't heard talked about, you know, just
is it Is it possible that this is a testament to how cars are made these days?
Yeah.
We obviously know they're not making bridges that well, but this might be a time to salute automobile manufacturers, because maybe you don't die in these things like you used to.
Yeah, like that one gentleman, he rode his truck all the way down, you know, and there's always going to be, you know, the rare miracle. But, I mean, it seems like there's so many so far in the situation where, you know, in the minute you've seen that with bumper to bumper, and you know how many cars, you know, when you're sitting on there and bumper to bumper across that whole span, I mean, you know, I don't know, they were saying 50. I would even say more. And, you know, I'm just thinking that, you know, already that head count would have been more, you know.
Yeah, good point.
That's to me to get the miracle. And then the other thing I was going to tell you, did anybody ever tell you, you don't jump out of a perfectly good airplane? I had to laugh on that a little bit. And
yeah, but the guy I was jumping out of the plane with said, why would you land in a plane when you have a perfectly good parachute?
Just, yeah, I know. I just recently got into, I've had a couple changes, too. My mother just passed away recently at about the same time. I just took up motorcycling at a later time in my life, around 50 years old, and you know, a lot of people are thinking I'm crazy for that, and it's something I wanted to do. And you know, I took the classes, got out there, and you know, I got about, in a month, I've got about 2,500 miles on riding with some different people. And you know, I know the first time, like you were talking about jumping out of the airplane, when you touch the throttle and get up to about, you know, 60-65 for the first time, it's like something takes over in your head. It feels like you're going to blow off, but your mind comes down to your hands and says, you better hold on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a process. And
well, you know, enjoy.
That's kind of how I'm trying to live my life today, is like a lot of what you guys are saying, or, you know, a couple of the earlier callers were saying, too, is, you know, if I was sitting on that bridge and it was me, you know, the one thing I wouldn't want is my mind to be, you know, be thinking about some frivolous thing that doesn't matter, worth squat, rather than, you know, thinking about the good things that we have in life, and you know, maybe the good or the fun things that we want to enjoy while we are here. You know, I'd rather, you know, have that on my mind. I guess that's what scares me more than death, is, you know, to spend my life, you know, not living to your potential.
Right. Excellent point.
And I guess that's, you know, mainly what I had.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Okay, Tommy. Right. Thanks.
Bye bye. And we'll go to Jim, who's been waiting. Jim.
Jim.
Yeah, go
Jim.
Ahead. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good show.
Thank you.
Listen, I hope that we don't hear about any more casualties from this bridge catastrophe, but from the very get-go, we've been hearing there were 30 missing, 20 missing, 30 missing, pretty high number. Now today it's 8, and I don't understand what accounts for the difference. I have not heard any reports about that. Can you elaborate on that?
Best question of the day. No, I can't, and I've wondered the same thing.
Where do these numbers come from, anyway?
Well, you have people, obviously, passing on to authorities that the whereabouts of someone, next of kin, a loved one, is unknown, and it turns out to have nothing to do with this bridge collapse. Obviously, if you all of a sudden don't know where someone is, and there's a bridge that has collapsed, you could connect the two, and they may not be connected at all, but I'd like to hear someone address that. I will ask my newsman if he's heard anything.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks. Well,
thank you. One more here before I go to news. Marty.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
You know, two topics. The show is great, by the way.
Thank you.
Today, thinking about the metaphysical, you know, the impacts of all this space and our own mortality, and having to worry about that and think about that. I mean, stuff like this puts it in your face in a way. Whether you pass a graveyard or somebody close to you dies, you always have to deal with that. And I think it's tough for a lot of people, not because of necessarily being afraid of those moments that you slip away from this existence, but for me, it's that what your last caller said. It's to live that unfulfilled life, you know. And you know, I don't want to sit on my deathbed and think, "Well, geez, I got nothing but a stack of regrets here." You know, that's kind of what it brings about for me. And personally, that's one topic. Then two, a much shallower thing would be the media coverage and saturation that happens around stuff like this. It's wacky. I mean, you know, if this had happened 30 years ago, you have a chance to process this stuff in incremental bits, you know. But now with the internet and the 24-hour wall-to-wall coverage and everything that goes along with that, and it just seems like it's a constant barrage of it. The reminders are always there. And the stories are great. The human stories, the individual acts of, you know, courage and heroism and survival. But it's a lot. I mean, I think a lot of people have a hard time dealing with it.
You're left too often in this world, but in a way this is encouraging. You're left to take care of yourself. And the way you do that is you limit your exposure. I have to do it. You limit your exposure. You can take a walk in the city I'm in right now along the Mississippi River in St. Paul and feel the astonishing beauty of the day and disconnect completely from what's going on. Or you can sit at home with radio, television, and internet. Your call. Now, some people feel absolutely drawn to it. It's like a magnet, not only to the media, but to the site itself. Other people run. There's a in-between. You can limit yourself. You can read the front page of the paper and say, well, that's what's going on at this point, and move on. Take a bike ride, go to work, knit. It's dangerous sometimes to go at the media when it's not exactly a billboard in your backyard. You have to actually go access it.
I know. Last thing, okay, I want to leave on this topic. You know, I'm always reminded when stuff like this happens of Carl Sagan and his remarks. And I'd have to paraphrase this because I can't remember his last quote about this. But, you know, we're all made of the same material that stars are made of.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when we go on from this existence, we go back to that, you know, to those base elements.
Yeah. I think he stole that from Walt Whitman.
He probably did.
Yeah,
that sounds about right. Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Johnny, newsman, you have an answer to that guy's question?
I'm sorry, Tommy, I didn't hear.
His question was, how did we get from 30 missing to 8?
I am guessing that...
Well, I can guess, John. You're a newsman. I'm assuming you have more than a guess.
Well, okay, maybe a little more. Like, they just held a press conference now indicating one person who they had on a list of the people they thought were missing had called them and said she was not missing. So my guess is that they have the list because people have reported people missing. They check it out to see if there's any chance at all that they were on the bridge.
It's interesting because you wonder on any given day how many people are missing in this town. Because clearly a bunch of people are missing who didn't... find themselves on the bridge that day. Where are they? What's going on there?
Don't you think, even from the law enforcement angle, there's a lot of guesswork that goes into those numbers, the 20, 30?
I wonder if it's a situation where someone's been missing for a year, the bridge goes down, and they call authorities saying, yeah, missing, I got a missing person. Okay, we'll add that to the list.
I don't think they would just add it. I would think they'd do a little more checking just to see, you know.
Well, I think this guy had an excellent question. How does this come about?
Yeah.
How does this all unfold?
I agree. It's an excellent question. And I don't know that you could get to the bottom of it without talking to, you know, a law enforcement official who actually is involved in that.
What I don't get is how do you know who's, or how do you even pinpoint a number when there could be single people that don't have family that could be down there. There could be all kinds of people down there that no one would have reported missing.
Right. No, the 30 would be, these are known missing people.
Right.
Okay.
And they have no number, really, of cars. I mean, they've seen a number of cars, so it's hard. You're right. The number, I think, could range anywhere from, you know, 10 to 50. Who knows?
Do you think that the way automobiles are constructed...
has a lot to do with why we have so many more people alive from this than we would in other years?
Yes, I would think so.
Because
yes.
Concrete's still concrete and steel's still steel. And the distance is always going to be the distance that it falls. But the cars are different.
Right.
You guys are older than I am. Do more people wear their seatbelts these days than did 20 years ago? I would
imagine
dramatic.
That.
Yes.
So dramatic.
I think that's a huge
difference.
Most
factor.
Definitely.
I wear a seatbelt solely because of years of being pestered by my wife. I would never wear one ordinarily. I didn't grow up with people who put them on.
Exactly.
I sat on my mom's lap when I was 2 years old in the front seat on long trips. I would have been the first one through the windshield. Seatbelts were interesting to look at. Look at, aren't they neat? Never put one on.
Yep.
As an adult, I never put one on. I got married. We had kids. And then the pestering started, and it just went on and on and on. And eventually it got to the point where I would put it on right away to stop that.
Yeah.
And then it would be, okay, I'm alone in a vehicle. I don't have to wear it. But she would say as I'm going out the door, put your seatbelt on. I think, all right, I better just do it because I hate to tell her I'm going to do it and then not.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's automatic, right?
And now I just do it. A buddy of mine who works at a newspaper in Montana told me that it was a result of dealing with all the crashes in the newsroom, about reading about and getting the police reports and just seeing how no seatbelt, dead, seatbelt alive, no seatbelt, dead, seatbelt. And enough of those after a while. He said everyone in a newsroom will wear their seatbelt just from receiving those stories and those reports.
Well, even as far as cars go, I was talking to Speed a little while ago. It's amazing when you look at some of the pictures of the aftermath where there's an SUV sitting almost at a right angle.
Well, what about this? You drop down 60 feet, 40 feet, and do you land face first into an airbag in most of these cases?
I suppose, yeah, I would think so. If the impact is in the front, sure.
Maybe that's the big story behind this. Obviously, we can't credit any one manufacturer. Every kind of car was on there. But maybe the designers of automobiles, we ought to tip our hat to them and say thanks. Mm-hmm. A few more people are alive today because of that.
It is sunny and 85 degrees out there. Authorities have identified four people who were killed when the Mississippi River Bridge collapsed. They are 60-year-old Cherry Ingebretson of Shoreview, 32-year-old Julia Blackhawk of Savage, 36-year-old Patrick Holmes of Moundsview, and 29-year-old Artemio Trinidad Mena of Minneapolis. The death toll is now at 5 with the recovery of a truck driver's body last night. He has not yet been identified. The number of injured has now been changed to 96, and police say 8 people are still missing. Expect bridge safety and funding for bridges to be a major issue when the legislature reconvenes. Governor Pawlenty vetoed a tax bill earlier this year that would have created millions of dollars to improve Minnesota's aging roads and bridges.
We were working to try to find some common ground for the next session. I had met with legislative leaders on the transportation area even before this, but this bridge probably wouldn't have been the beneficiary of that in the near term because that wasn't apparently on the plan or the schedule. This was out further for engineering reasons. However, we need to do better, and I'm sure there'll be action on the legislature, and we'll help lead that effort.
Both houses of Congress are working on emergency funding for this incident. The Bush administration already has pledged $5 million with the promise of more to come. Nation's unemployment rate edged up in July to 4.6%. At the same time, the Labor Department reports that new job creation slowed. As investors on Wall Street to get that news, stocks have been headed down today. And New York City police have three people in custody for questioning after a strange-looking submarine was spotted near the docked Queen Mary 2 today. They do say there's no indication that the incident was related to terrorism. They just say it's a strange incident, and they're looking into it. 5 Eyewitness News weather forecast. Increasing cloud, 65 overnight tonight. Soaking rains possible tomorrow. High of 78. Right now, 85 at AM 1500.
Mishki, AM 1500, KSTP.
Amber, go ahead.
I just wanted to, send out my condolences, first of all, to those people that were lost in the bridge accident and whatnot. And, you know, my prayers are with the people that are still looking for the missing. But my other question is that you need to look at the bigger picture, and I wanted to know maybe what kind of pollution damage this has on our environment. Like, what exactly is going to happen with all this debris and cars that are in the river leaking out gasoline and what looked to be, a tanker or two also on the bridge? It's just, I'm concerned about my air I breathe and my water that I drink. You know what I mean?
Well,
In terms of the Mississippi, I'm afraid that bus left the station quite a while ago.
Oh, I have to agree with you on that.
That's a rough river to be thinking about if you're wondering about where the good water is.
But just because the water is already damaged, you know, it's not, don't let go of all hope. Like, I lived on the St. Croix most of my life, and going to the cities for school, I'd see, like, you know, you look at the St. Croix water, it's nice and blue and clear, and you look at the Mississippi, and you're like, I don't even want to touch it.
Amazingly, the river is quite a bit cleaner, the Mississippi, today than when I was a young boy swinging over it on a rope swing and not trying to fall into it, but occasionally falling into it and wondering how many showers I needed.
Yeah.
It's apparently quite a bit cleaner. I'm sure there's going to be an environmental cleanup involved, but I don't think that's...
I just don't think that's a major... It's still a concern, though. You know, you should still be...
I'm not actually able myself to get myself concerned about it. I can't. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know why I can't.
I think it's just maybe I grew up in a different generation, and what's being taught in school is, you know, like, they're pushing a lot more environmental safe, like...
But there's so much more.
It is a bigger problem. I understand that, but it's just like it's still a concern. Like, I haven't heard anybody talk about like anything like that, and I know that there's a bigger issue at hand. But it's still.
I think that's exactly why you haven't heard anybody talk about it. Maybe 3 weeks down the line, you'll see an article creep in the paper about that, but I think at this point people feel it's almost...
It's already almost a lot to, like, famine, you know, it's already a lot to take in and think about. Like, I grew up in the cities, and I don't know, I'm just, like, I freaked out. I thought my mom was in it and stuff, because she commutes that way, and I was worried and shocked, too, but after a few days of letting it sink in, like, that thought crossed my mind. I'm just like, oh, my goodness, like, I haven't heard anything that's going to happen about it.
There was probably a fish swimming by who took one for the team.
Oh, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks so much, Amber.
You too. Bye.
Who do we have here? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, wondering if there was anything in those the train cars that were underneath the bridge.
I don't have an answer to that. I have someone here saying that the best place to have been on that bridge may have been the porta-potties because, for some reason, looking at the footage, they're all upright afterwards. They didn't even tip over. But I don't think they're making porta-potties like they make cars. I think porta-potties are still rough places to be when a bridge goes down.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you could get an answer on that.
Was anyone in the train cars that were crushed?
No. The train cars are like tankers.
Oh.
And wondering if they were loaded or unloaded. Or...
Oh, I see what you're asking. Okay. Well, I know John Haidt will have a guess.
Okay.
Thanks. Bonjour, Sam.
Bonjour, Tommy. See, this is, you know, after World War II, I got married when the war was over, and I had my bride with me out west, and I had 6 more months to serve, and I was living in Navy housing, or military housing in a suburb of Seattle. And so when I got discharged, we were going to come home to St. Paul on train, but a rail strike was imminent. So we decided, you know, maybe we should take the Greyhound bus. Well, in order to do this, we had to take the Greyhound from Seattle to Portland and then down into San Francisco. And long story short, there was no place to stay there. So we spent 3 days and nights in San Francisco, and we just stayed in the movie theaters. They were open 24 hours. And a bus left from there every 4 hours to St. Paul. So we, this one day, we went to see how our numbers were doing. And I could have gotten on the bus, but my wife couldn't. So that took care of that. And I waited another 4 hours. So I was the first one on the bus. And the driver said, boy, he said, you just missed the last bus. Yeah, another 4 hours in this blankety-blank town. He says, well, you were lucky. He said, that bus was going down this grade, and a logging truck was coming from a side road and didn't want to lose its momentum and didn't stop and was going to come up the grade, and it collided. And 19 people on that bus died outright. The driver of the semi, of course, died. And when we went by there, the bus was still on fire, you know, still smoldering. And I have no idea how many people died, you know, afterward as a result of injuries and burns and so forth. So it just kind of goes to show you, you know.
What does it go to show you, Sam?
I don't know. Well, think about it.
I do. I just don't know what that goes to show you. I'm serious when I say, what do we take from that?
I don't know. I don't.
You take something from it.
Well, just think for a moment. You know, I've been tooling down highways and I've seen a bad accident happen right in front of me, and that could have been me.
Yeah.
I had to stop and tie my shoelaces.
Yeah. I've hung from my hands off a water tower during my insane youth, and I think I was trying to die. I don't know. I used to do things that should have killed me. I think that when you're young, you sometimes like to dance with the devil a little bit, yeah, and see what happens. And many times I should be dead, and I'm not. But I don't. I used to think, oh, I must have been helped by somebody.
Yeah.
And now I just think, well, that's just what happened.
Well,
because
know,
as
well,
soon
I'm
as I start
know.
To think something helped me, then I have to think it didn't help those people on the bridge.
Well, you know me well enough by now to know that I've been in the same shoes that you've been in, you know.
Well, a little more so when you throw in Iwo Jima and stuff.
But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out because that came to mind right away as soon as I found out about that bridge.
A lot of people think that way. A lot of people really spend a lot of time thinking about how this could be them. And I would like to sometime get behind that and see what all that is.
Be interesting, wouldn't it? Well, if we get there before I do,
I'll
keep
you
in.
Yeah, I'll clue you in. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Make which, Sam.
Make which for listening.
One issue, Sam.
AM 1500, KSTP.
Hey, there's a wonderful event going on at Augsburg College. A regular listener, Mark, you probably remember his calls. Ananashinaabe, who calls in from time to time, not to be confused with Canadian Cree Sam, who I was just speaking with. Manifest, M-A-N-N-A-F-E-S-T, starts this weekend. A festival of spiritual performance where the sacred and the imagination meet in profound conversations. Mark does some sort of stand-up comedy slash spiritual conversation deal, and I just think the whole thing sounds quite interesting. You can find it by putting into a search engine Manifest, M-A-N-N-A-F-E-S-T, and Augsburg. Put those together and you'll learn more about it. Thanks to everybody for participating today. Thanks to you people who listened. Have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday. Souchere's next. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis.